This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Digital Desires, the show that explores how screen culture is changing human interaction, how it's changing communications. I am Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarasan.
Joining us this week is the one and only Uma Pagan Ambige Pagan. Welcome back.
Hello, always a pleasure.
Cultural commentator, critic, film guy. So today we're going to talk about what's become viral, and that is the famous Najib appeal video.
Is that what we're sure calling
you've all seen it. I'm
well,
sure.
We actually had another name for it, but we decided to go with the Najib appeal video.
Yeah, or sometimes it's been referred to as Najib's 13 Reasons Why video, if you've seen the Netflix show. Now, what are your impressions of it before we get into the details, Vizla?
Before I go into that, we are doing the show live today, and we are on Facebook Live, and if you want to stream tune in to watch us stream live, go to the BFM Bigger Picture Facebook page and you can send us your questions or engage with us there, or you can send us an email at biggerpicture@bfm.my. Uma and Fuad are waving now if you caught us
like crazy people. Yes.
Okay, so what are my thoughts on the video? My first impressions were it's a real tearjerker.
Are you being facetious?
I am. but no, obviously that is the intention, right? It is very well crafted. Oh, maybe okay, I put well in open and close commas.
You're right. I think production value-wise, it is well crafted.
Yes. The music, the images especially, right? All the images that were chosen were carefully curated to send out a very specific message. And there was this message of pity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got.
Yeah, kasihan, right? It's a very pervasive sentiment already in this country, at least. So I think he's riding on that.
It's a very smart move. I mean, my first thought when I saw the video, and of course everything that Najib Razak has been doing online and on social media of late has been, why wasn't your communications this good before GE14, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the first. I mean, credit where it's due, he seems to have a structured strategy with regards to this court case. But what I wanted to ask you, Fuad Rahmat, was to delve into the Malay psyche, because he seems to be going down this line of this is a test from God, because he knows very well that that is what is going to appeal to the masses. Kasihan, but also, look at this, God is testing me and I will prevail and come out stronger on the other side.
Yeah, and the visual language for that is interesting, right? We see him praying, we see him making
with his mom?
Yeah, with his mom. Also, towards the end, you see similar types of visuals that you find in Azan videos, the call for prayer.
That's right.
Sort of the sun setting, you know, nature and all that, right? So he's clearly pointing to familiar references that we already see when we're trying to evoke piety. The question here is the extent to which this is going to be effective, right? Because at the same time, it strikes as desperation, right? Because one thing that we can say by now about Najib's online image is that it never is quite convincing. Right, that there is always cynicism trailing whatever he tries to do, right?
Well, even if you look at that first photograph that he posted during, I guess, the first day of Ramadan, of him in the mosque praying, right? And it wasn't a natural photograph. It felt like an orchestrated, professionally taken photograph. And there were, I think, a series of three or four photos. And even that felt disingenuous, because if it was a real photograph, you know, it's from your phone, it's from a weird angle, not some guy from the balcony looking down on you as you're praying, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has been a performance.
Yes.
What I've been looking at, and this is not just now, but it's been since 2015 when the story first broke, it is gaslighting.
Yeah, I can't think of a better word.
What it is basically, it's not just pulling a wool over our eyes. It is actually altering our perception of what is real.
Convincing me that I'm crazy.
Yeah, whatever you're seeing isn't quite there. Yeah,
exactly. Right? Yeah. And it's convincing you that you're crazy. And it's also making us, you know, it's making us question what we think we know. It's making us question everything that's being put out there. It's making us question ourselves. And it's also making him look like the really good guy.
Okay, so
well, that's what he's trying to do.
Yes. Yes. So we've had some, I guess, conflicting imagery come out from this morning as well. So, you know, from this morning, I think one of the things that stood out for me were his supporters who were there at the courts. I mean, there was a lot of thuggish behavior. They were very unruly with the police. I mean, surely that doesn't go down well, because that's a stark contrast to the kind of pitiful character that he's trying to portray, because here are what we assume are either paid operatives or people who have been told to do this, carrying out their master's wishes.
Yes, but that's also not unlike usual UMNO behavior, is it?
Yes, but I just mean it's in contrast to his messaging.
Yeah, I don't think he can control
messaging.
That. That's the thing.
Yes.
I don't think he can control that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't think he thinks about PR well enough. Right? It's probably on his mind, but I don't think it's refined enough, whatever the strategy has in mind. So the pity party on one hand and his sort of performances of piety is one matter, but if you even look at the times when he was trying to be hyper-masculine or aggressive, like when he used the word haram jada,
yes,
when he used kepala bapak kau, panglima bugis, even that... This was before the loss. This was when he was trying to show some bravado. Even that didn't come across convincing, you know? Even that was mocked, right? There's something about his public persona that is always somewhat hesitant or tentative, it seems, right? Like, he never really was certain of who he is. I mean, that's just me speculating, but that's one of the sense I get.
Yeah. But drawing back to what you said and then going back to the gaslighting scenario. Mm. So here's what makes us susceptible to gaslighting is when we want approval from our gaslighter. Right? So the thuggish behavior could be, harkening back to the days where people still want
the
strong man's approval, the father figure, the leader figure, the head, whatever it is. It could just be that. I mean, my favorite clip from this morning is one that Bernama has posted, and it shows Najib coming into court. And so he steps out of his car and he's walking up, and people are all calling his name. People are calling his name. And then this is one, it's a woman's voice, and she's calling his name, and he doesn't turn to look at her, and she says, "La, tanakawan la."
That is a great line.
Okay. I wasn't sure what I heard, so I sent it out to Twitterland, and everybody, you know, sort of came back and said they heard the same thing. So I know I'm not going crazy.
Makes me wonder, why did she go there?
Here you go. We all want approval.
Yeah, but of all people to get approval from nowadays, you know what I mean? It seems like you could raise your bar a bit. I don't know.
Also, Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, yes. You know, if these people are gaslighted enough to believe that he is really...
Yeah, I think there's going to be the 10% or 20%.
Yes, there is that. But then there's the other, you know, the other percentage that just want to, you know, who do this because they are loyal.
They look loyal. Yeah.
Or they seriously believe that he is innocent.
Right. We're also opening the lines for your feedback. WhatsApp us on 018-789-8899. Call us at 03-771-09000. We'd love to hear from you. Another question that you raised, Umar, that I find very interesting is, where was all this thinking about perception before the loss, right? Was he overconfident? Did he really... It looked like he didn't plan to lose, right?
I think, you know, there was an interesting article in the Malaysian Insight. I think Jabar Sadiq was giving us an inside look at what happened at his house on election night. And there was a question, you know, do people really hate me that much? Mm-hmm. And I think that question is very symbolic of, I suppose, how in a bubble they might have been with regards to where this last election went. So I think you're right, Fuad. Maybe they really didn't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been, you know, ever since the candlelight vigil last night, I've been wondering as to the strategy behind it, because there has been this carefully orchestrated strategy that has taken place on a timeline. Mm-hmm. Candlelight vigil. After the candlelight vigil, we released this video. Video at about 11 p.m. And then this morning, his daughter posted an Instagram photo of him holding the grandson with a really soppy Instagram message, you know, about this man who's only thinking about the rakyat day in
there. You have to think about the father.
So
just this one time.
It's a concerted strategy, isn't it? I mean, none of this is by chance or by accident. The timing at which these posts seem to come out, it's all a plan. Yeah. So there is either a PR mind behind it or something.
Yeah. How would you rate it though? You observe the media a lot. You think about perception a lot. How do you find it so far, the first 24 hours?
In any ordinary circumstance, I would say, you know, this is how PR people work and how they implement their social media strategy. Mm. But this isn't an ordinary circumstance.
Right,
it feels like The news that's coming out about Najib Razak at the moment, there is not a single thread of positivity. Mm-hmm. So that is a lot of negativity to fight through. And you need to, I don't know if, this just comes across as being disingenuous. So right. I don't know how you fight this. I don't know if it's actually possible to PR your way out of it.
I was thinking, what if instead or in addition to the pity route, you also take the factual route? Do short videos of like, you know, fact one, this is what the government says. Fact two, this is what I say. Something like that, you know?
Yeah, because there's two approaches, right? There's the innocent approach of, you know, being a braggart, being completely obnoxious about it and going, how dare you? I am in the right, you know, and all of this stuff. And then there's this approach of, woe is me. It is a political persecution coming to get me.
So I think your suggestion might be viewed as a bit aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the crowd that he's trying to appeal to would not take to that kind.
Yeah,
precisely.
Yeah.
But also, the thought just came to me is this morning also, there were a lot of placards sort of drawing parallels between this arrest and the arrest of Anwar Ibrahim.
That's right.
In 97. And I'm wondering, if, of course, we know what angle they're going for, right? The persecution angle. Of course, in the 97, there was no social media. And a lot of the messaging, a lot of the PR around that was very organic. It was very, you know, it was very grassroots based. It was coming from the people who were working on the ground. A lot of, NGO people and current politicians, you know, started there. Could it be that that's one of the reasons why it was easier to believe? Because there was a sense of an organic nature to it. Compared to now, there was less of a possibility to craft something.
You know,
and a lot of it you had to think about on your feet and it had to come up. And people were very spontaneous about it and things like that, right? And now a lot of it is so crafted and you have to be crafted on social media. You have to be crafted while using screens.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why there is that factor of, you know, disingenuity?
I think you're right. I think the realness, the rawness of that movement back in 97, we're a lot more cynical because we're bombarded with so much stuff. And we're also taught on a daily basis to be cynical, question everything. It could be fake news. Who knows, you know? And because of that, I think we're less likely to believe these sorts of things. Organic movements, like what we've seen even in the Arab Spring and stuff like that. Whenever something is remotely organic, it immediately garners the kind of support and awe that the public, anything that the public are willing to give them, right? But whenever we smell a bit of PR or advertising, we're immediately taken aback.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's the realness and the rawness of that movement.
Interesting stuff, Uma and Vizla. Let's take a break for now. We'll be right back to hear more on your thoughts and as well as our panels on Najib's quote-unquote appeal video. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Digital Desires, a show that explores how screen culture is changing human communication. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman alongside Vizla Kumarisan and special guest Uma Pagan Ambige Pagan here. We are talking about Najib's quote-unquote appeal video that was released last night. You probably have seen it because it's gone viral. In the first part of the show, we just shared our impressions of it. And of course, points of cynicism and of course other talking points as well that Najib is seemingly taking his PR more seriously than before. Now, we have a question from WhatsApp. It goes like this. Do we know if Najib is still using the same PR company?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows who his current PR company is. Whatever is happening is going to require money of some sort.
Yep.
That video production, like we said earlier, was quite a heavy production. So we don't know. It's definitely cost a lot of money. And so I think that's something to consider, right?
Yeah. And it seems more local now. The tone isn't, the tone is more, how would you say, crafted.
Right. Fuad, I'm sorry to cut you off. We believe that actually former Prime Minister Najib Razak is actually giving a press conference at the moment. We're going to set that up. And while we're waiting for that live stream to kick in, Fuad, just one more thing about that video. So You know, the current video we saw yesterday, in comparison with the series of videos that were being released before the elections, for me, that's an interesting angle as well, because there was a little bit of a pity party even in those videos.
That's
true. Even if you take the rhetoric used by, say, Khairi Jamaluddin and Najib, there was a rhetoric of pity that ran through that as well. We're going to cut live now to the press conference with Najib Razak. Here it is.
Saya terpaksa bayar kerana 42 tahun saya berkhidmat untuk rakyat dan negara. Maka kalau inilah harga yang terpaksa saya bayar, saya reda lah. Apa yang saya sangat harap dan doakan bahawa proses keadilan ni merupakan proses yang benar-benar adil. Mengikut rule of law dalam erti kata yang sebenar. Saya yakin insyaAllah atas ketidaksalahan saya, I believe in my innocence, ini adalah peluang yang terbaik untuk saya membersihkan nama saya secara tuntas setelah di tomah dan dituduh dengan begitu berat sekali. Hari ini hakim telah membuat keputusan bahawa ada gag order atas kes ini. Jadi saya menghormati keputusan hakim dan saya tak boleh bercakap lebih daripada itu. Saya suka mengambil kesempatan ini mengucap terima kasih kepada pihak SBRM dan pasukan keselamatan kerana telah memberi layanan yang baik kepada saya dan telah menghormati saya sebagai bekas Perdana Menteri. Mudah-mudahan proses ini berjalan dengan baik. InsyaAllah saya harap rakyat bertenang, menyokong saya bertenang. Saya juga kagum dengan kehadiran mereka untuk memberi sokongan moral pada saya. Walaupun saya tidak buat sesuatu gerakan, tapi mereka telah datang dengan penuh kerelaan hati. Saya ucap terima kasih dan mudah-mudahan apa yang saya hasratkan secara peribadi, Allah akan memakbulkan doa saya dan hajat saya, insyaAllah. Terima kasih.
Are you confident you'll be giving a fair trial? Are you confident that you'll be given a fair trial?
Mr. Hot Shot Lawyer.
Okay, you want to do question answer or you want me to?
Can you tell us more about the gag order that you're asking for? What does it entail?
Okay, the gag order was primarily aimed at stopping anyone at all making statements, and then that statement get published in the media, which are unfair. For instance, even before the trials have started, there are people who make comments like Dato' Sri Najib is 100% guilty. They have never seen a bigger fraud case than this, and so on and so on. So, as you know, our constitution guarantees, just like most other civilized countries, we have got a constitution that guarantees fair trial. One of the fundamentals of fair trial is that you cannot discuss, public cannot issue statements that comments upon the merits of the case in a prejudicial way. But if you are reporting a court proceeding, for instance, when the trial starts, or today, you're going to report about what transpired in court very clinically, there's nothing wrong with it, because you're not commenting on the merits, making comments about whether or not Dato' Sri Najib is a person who pretends that he doesn't have money. Things like that you cannot do, because that will be prejudicial and it's against fair trial concept. So the gag order is to stop anyone making comments like that pertaining to the merits of the four charges and getting it published in any media. That was the idea.
Are you confident that Mr. Najib will be able to clear his name? He said he maintained his innocence. Are you confident that he will be able to clear his name? Will he be given a fair trial?
Without going into the merits, because the gag order is my application, I can tell you in a general way what we have as a team examined. We are happy with the case of the defense. We are very happy. So, in short, I'm saying that we are confident that we've got a good defense. I can't go beyond that. Yeah, but you will see the unfolding of the defense when the trial starts. Right? The gag order is just to ensure nobody make unfair comments about the merits of the case in order to get it published by the media.
Does it apply to social media?
Well, for instance, to say he is guilty or innocent, you know, without the trial having even unfolded. That's basically making a pre-judgment of the case, in other words.
Does it apply to social media comments as well?
All. To all kind of media, whether traditional or digital or social media, it will be applicable.
By the media.
Yeah.
Jadi di Malaysia akan lebih banyak IT datang, lebih banyak IT akan dikemukakan kaitan sidang sedia ke menghadapi lebih banyak US anti-state more
well,
charges?
Well, you see, there are only two matters. Ada dua perkara. Ya. Satu perkara M1 MDB, lagi satu perkara SRC. Dua aja. Today we got SRC. But the bigger matter was 1 MDB. So I will leave it to your imagination why 1 MDB they have not charged. Okay? Why SRC?
Sorry,
can't
say the gag order is only SRC.
Yes. Yes. That's a good point. Because the gag order is about today's proceeding.
What happens if the gag order is free?
Yeah. The gag order is basically for the media not to print. Doesn't matter who spoke about it. It can be the chairman of MACC, it can be the commissioner of MACC, it could be the minister of finance, it could be Datuk Sri Najib himself. If he keep on saying he's innocent because of this, because of that, he too is prohibited. So that let the court decide.
But the gag order is only until CM, can the next CM?
Because it is an interim. The next CM, we have a full-blown argument whether or not the gag order should be given in its finality. Okay?
Essentially, if it is violated, then what will happen? Is it a contempt order?
It will be a contempt order. We are thinking very seriously about it.
What is the reason, Kanshi?
Well, we have mentioned a little bit, but in short, I think he has made a prejudgment even before becoming the Attorney General.
Are you concerned that your client will not be able to be given a fair trial? Are you concerned by the conduct of the case so far? Will your client be given a fair trial?
Okay, thus far, from what I've seen, including even from the proceeding yesterday and today in court, thus far I'm quite happy that it seems to be in accordance with law. I hope during the trial, everything goes as expected, namely in accordance with fair trial principle. My client is not worried about the trial, not worried about the defense, providing
that he's given a fair shake at the time, which we are sure, looking at the judge today, the way the judge behaved in his decorum, and we are quite sure that he's going to be a fair trial.
Do you know, did the prosecution indicate to you regards to one MTB? When are the other charges?
No, no indication.
No indication?
No indication whatsoever.
Is February 8th a really long gap before trial actually starts?
You mean this case?
For this particular case, is that normal given that the, you know, the nature of this case and the personality involved?
Well, normally it is us who ask for the delay because we are taken by surprise. But you will note, it is a prosecution who asks for delay of 1 month for a mere mention. And as I've said, and I'm very serious about this, you will not realize the seriousness of what I said this morning until you become an accused person. If you are an accused person or your loved one become an accused person, you will suddenly remember me and say, well, Tan Sri Shafiq said the right thing because it hits you right in the nose. If you don't have documents given to you to see the detailed allegation, how are you going to defend yourself? In civil proceeding, you exchange pleading, you exchange documents. For months and months, you exchange, you do interrogation, you do discovery, all that. Why? Because you want to know what is the other's case, and the other want to know what is your case. So everything is threshed out. Can you imagine? That is civil, just pure money judgment. But when your life is at stake, you can be hanged, you can be sent to 20 years imprisonment, you can be sent to 10 years imprisonment. The Attorney General today said, well, there is a provision 51A. We are only supposed to give you before the trial. But he doesn't understand before the trial means reasonably before the trial. But the Interpretation Act says whenever time is not given, you act as speedily as possible. Not, you know, in 1 week's trial you give it to me. What am I going to do? Well, I have to ask for adjournment. So I told you today this morning, when I went to Brisbane defending Tan Sri Mohd Taib, it is a country we all were scared because we thought is anti-Asian. They call it a redneck country. It is not. When I went there, when Mohd Taib was charged, the very day he was charged, the DPP came with the IO and gave me a stack of this paper and said, this is the paper that we have got to introduce and we will prove the case through this. On the same day. Now, when they charged my client today, you would have thought, you must be ready. After all, Tan Sri Gani Patel and his gang said, well, we were ready in 2015 July. If you're ready in 2015 July, how come you're not ready today? And why did it take so long to charge? So it tells you something else, that the attempt to so-called charge him in 2015 was a little suspicious. If it is true that there was an attempt to charge him. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Would you say the prosecution then might potentially be hostile with your client? The prosecution, based on what you said, you say that they could potentially be hostile towards your client?
Well, they can be hostile, but I do not expect them to be unfair. Because, you know, lawyers have got a certain amount of arrogance, namely, intellectually we are arrogant. We do not want people to think we are unfair. So I hope that parameter will exist. Somehow, fairness will prevail. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is one occasion I 100% agree with the Bar Council. No, I don't know what the task force is doing. There is no such thing as a task force that should advise the Attorney General. The Attorney General under Article 1453 has got his sole discretion. Nobody can even question him. Not even the court can question his discretion.
But now it looks as though, from what the Bar Council has been saying, the Attorney General is being dictated by a task force of four men. That's not constitutional. That's in fact totally illegal. And I am disturbed by it. I'm very disturbed by it. And the constituent of the four members, there are people in the previous regime that have done investigation, people in the previous regime that was the Attorney General, people like that who are already in some way or other tainted somewhat. Okay? I'm not saying tainted in a bad way, but they are tainted and they may have a prejudgment. So why are these people in the task force supervising the Attorney General? I've never seen this before.
Regime, are you referring to the Najib's administration?
Well, during Najib's administration, I remember Gani Patil set up a task force. And I remember an opinion being given to the Attorney General, to the Prime Minister, that a task force set up without the sanction of the Cabinet is illegal. Because under 1452, tadi saya kata 3 kan, 1452, any special task to be given to the Attorney General must be given either by the Prime Minister or the Cabinet through another minister. So it has got to be sanctioned by a member of the government. That task force was not sanctioned.
Okay. There were reports saying that you received payment from one MPP. Do you think this will get you disqualified?
Well, they can try. All I say is they can try. I'm not going to tell the details to make their job a lot easier, okay? But they're going to, if they do try, they'll get some shock.
BFM 89.9, you're back on Digital Desires with me, Fuad, alongside Vizla and Uma. And how fitting that our discussion on the quote-unquote appeal video blended in with Najib's immediate remarks after the charges were read. What are your thoughts?
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's absolutely fitting that we're talking about, I guess, the line of pity that he took. So who we just heard from, of course, was Tan Sri Shafi, who is Najib Razak's lawyer. But before that, we heard from Najib Razak. And you know, one of his early lines was, you know, I guess, you know, I've served the Rakyat for 42 years. If this bail amount is the amount I have to pay, then, well, I just have to pay it. You know, it's the cost of service. And that is such an interesting line.
It is. It goes back to what we were talking about before. We had to take a break for the news conference about the pity and, you know, the tapping into the kasihan sentiment.
Yeah. Now, it's too early to say, but how effective do you think this is? Are people listening to this and actually feeling moved, other than the loyalists that we've seen? But I'm talking about the general public. What's your sense?
I think they are, you know, for what, and this is what I think it's coming from. I think people, even the people who are aware of the extent of the alleged crimes, we're human after all. And so I've spoken to people who have been, I guess, rabidly against Najib and Rosma. And yet when they see them being hauled to court, there'll be a throwaway line of, ayah, kasihan also.
Yeah.
Right? And that's coming from all segments of society. And I'm not just talking about, you know, whether it's my mom or dad saying it. I'm talking about even young people, our age, my friends, who say, don't you feel there's a minute of, like, I feel sorry for them, you know, they're being dragged through the dirt like this.
Yeah. What is it about social media that puts us in a default fragile mode, right? You know, because that seems to be the theme, right? That it's so sentimental, that space.
Yeah.
Right? It's full of melodrama, right? It's not really a rational public sphere. Right, the ideal is that, you know, democracy develops into a rational public sphere where everybody can debate, when information is your fingertips, therefore you can reason. But no, we want melodrama, right? We want sentimentality.
Suka lah. I mean, no, but that's what makes it exciting, right? Vizla, I mean, isn't that part of our human psyche, our nature, that this is the stuff that triggers us in all the right places?
Absolutely.
That's why we watch The Bold and the Beautiful every day. Like, you know, that's why it's been running for like 40 years or something.
Yeah. But the other thing I also want to draw attention to is this gag order.
Right.
Right.
Almost all the questions to Tan Sri Shafi were about this gag order.
Yes. So from what I understand is that he's applied for a gag order, yep, and it's been temporarily granted.
Correct.
Until the full hearing comes in
August the 8th.
August. Oh, wow. Okay, so in a month's time. But what does that mean for discussions about this case? Mm-hmm. And also, I'm very curious, like, why do we need a gag order? We don't have a jury. Something we've been talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
We don't need a jury. And so it's not like we need to keep people...
Protect the judges from influence. Because that's the general idea. Because if there's a trial by media, if there's a trial by public perception, I can understand somewhat if it was a jury trial, because the layman might get influenced.
But a judge is a judge, because they're trained to make decisions independent of...
In isolation, yeah.
...sentiment, right?
Absolutely.
So what is the point of the gag order? And what does this mean for you and I, talking about this case?
So, Tanjeev Shafi kind of made it slightly clearer as to what this gag order was. We've been talking about it ever since it was announced, and we weren't actually sure what it meant when he said you can't discuss the merits of a case. What he said was that basically the media cannot amplify statements made about the merits of the case by just anyone. Mm-hmm. So I think what he's trying to avoid are media articles and reports based on Facebook comments and social media and bold claims about what we're seeing being dragged out of their homes and properties, etc. So I think it doesn't prevent you, the everyday tweeter or Facebooker, of making a claim on your own feed. But I think the gag order is to prevent, say, the Malay Mail Online of taking that tweet and making it into a 10-part article.
Yeah. I wonder how earnest this is, or if it's just a statement to extend Najib's continuous claim that he's just basically being... trial by media, right? So he's just, I don't know if he takes this seriously enough to kind of, you know, launch into a proper all-out campaign to track down everything that's been said. But just to say, like, look, this is our stance, and this gag order shows that we're serious about it, right? So, we'll see. I mean, interesting developments, you know. And to think that all this is just getting started.
Yeah. So, just day one.
So, all right, let's wrap up. Before we go, any concluding thoughts, though, Uma and Vizla?
So all of this is uncharted territory, right? We've been saying everything. The line that's been used the most, the word is unprecedented, right? I think Najib Razak is only the second leader in Southeast Asia to be tried like this. The first, of course, being Estrada in the Philippines.
Yes.
I think he's the fifth in Asia. I want to say Japan, Korea... I'm forgetting one. Anyway, the fifth in Asia, second in Southeast Asia. So it's all unprecedented, all new territory. And what's more, this is a trial, unlike even, say, Estrada, that has these elements that you guys talk about every week. This digital element, this social media stuff, where everyone is a commentator. And I don't know, come next year, do you think this trial is going to be broadcast? I mean, there has never been something of this level of public interest in the Malaysian psyche. Are we going to see an OJ type trial where every moment is chronicled and put out there and Facebook lived and everything? I mean, can you just imagine? I mean, that for me is, it's exciting and frightening at the same time.
Yeah, because there's so many unanswered questions as to like what will turn out, right?
It's all of the scary things you've seen in movies. Imagine if it's Facebook lived and every statement is hearted or liked or angry-faced. I mean, it's insane.
Well, I'm not so concerned about the kind of responses it'll get. I'm just more concerned about how, for me, it'll just be too much. Like, even today, I'm just like, oh, my God, everything's happening at such a quick pace. I can't keep up. But to have that on all the time... the challenge would be to switch off.
Yeah, the stakes are higher because we're so used to stability and non-confrontation. As a political culture, everything's been largely indirect, backdoor channels, negotiations that are subtle, right? Whereas now everything's in our face, right? So it's just the spectacle we're not used to. But yeah, we'll keep tracking these developments and how online sentiments are reflecting onto real life and vice versa. Thanks so much again, Uma, for joining us and
sharing your
thoughts. Feel free to email the show at BFM, at biggerpicture@bfm.my, or tweet us at BFM Radio. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarasan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.